Mostrare un importante interscambio di valori umani in un lungo arco temporale o all'interno di un'area culturale del mondo.
To bear a unique or at least exceptional testimony to a culture and tradition or to a civilization which is living or which has disappeared.
Offrir un exemple éminent d'un type de construction ou d'ensemble architectural ou technologique ou de paysage illustrant une ou des périodes.
Представлять собой выдающийся образец традиционного человеческого поселения, землепользования или использования моря, характерного для той или иной культуры или культур.
Culturas o interacción humana con el medio ambiente, especialmente cuando se ha vuelto vulnerable bajo el impacto de un cambio irreversible. Estar asociado directa o tangiblemente con acontecimientos o tradiciones vivas, con ideas o con creencias, con obras artísticas y literarias de destacada importancia universal.
The American writer Hemingway said that only in winter can true Venice be seen. In the dusky winter light of the Adriatic, the traces left by the sea winds are clear. Roads that seem to rise and fall like the waves mark the presence of generations past in a city where time seems to have been stilled. On the other side of the world, the ancient city of Dunhuang, which flourished 1300 years ago, is re-emerging from the sands of the Gobi Desert. A new form for the city is being born. What sustained these two cities at their peak? For each, the one-word answer is trade. Across the Gobi Desert northwest of Dunhuang loom the remains of the Han Dynasty Great Wall, built 2,000 years ago. The arid lands of northwest China are in part eased by the meltwater flows from the Chilian Mountains. A combination of glacier meltwater and mountain rainfall flow northwards into a long but narrow fault basin, which supports a belt of oases. This is the key gateway to the west, the Hersey Corridor. From the late 2nd century, the Han Dynasty set up four prefectures along the Hersey Corridor: Wuwei, Zhangye, Ziuquan, and Dunhuang. They bisected the barbarian kingdoms of the Xiongnu to the north and Qin to the south. Further west, beyond the Pamir Mountains, the whole of Central Asia lies before you. Dunhuang's strategic location at the westernmost end of the Hersey Corridor guards the gateway to China's central plains. The territory once saw waves of nomadic peoples. The Qianyong, Wushuan, Raozhi, and Xiongnu people. They bequeath her the ancient name of Duanhong. Donghuang is surrounded by the Mingxia, the Singing Sand Dunes, with the Qilian Mountains to the south. Rivers and streams flow out of the northern foothills of the Qilian, nourishing lakes and oases scattered along the way. The capital of Donghuang Prefecture is located on an alluvial plain by the west bank of the Donghua River. To the north, Sule River runs east to west, forming a natural barrier against invaders. In 111 BC, when the Donghuang Prefecture was established, beacon towers were erected along the south bank of the Sule. The beacon towers were a few thousand meters apart, but are all in view of each other and quickly pass on signals and intelligence dependent on the situation. In the Han Dynasty, beacon towers were mostly square columns, wide at the bottom and narrowing at the top, at over 7 meters in height. More than 2,000 years ago, these beacon towers stood to guard against potential invasion. The Great Wall was built with adobe, sand and stone, together with reeds, salt, cedars and other plant fibers to alternate and overlap layer by layer. Saline alkaline water from nearby marshes was used to glue together the mixture of feeble reeds and loose sand, making the combination surprisingly strong and solid. The Great Wall of the Han Dynasty extended about 300 kilometers in Donghuang, westward from Jiuquan in the east to the boundless desert east of Lupnu. The route then divided into two branches, the one going northwest as Daqi Road and the other southwest as Yangguan Road. They represented both protection and peaceful trade. If the Sule River, fortified along its banks, was the defense line in the north, then the Danghe River, which flows south to the north, is the life source for Donghuang. Glacier meltwaters from the western section of Qilian Mountains turn on the southern slope of Sulenan Mountains and the northern slope of the Danhenan Mountains into more than 370 streams. These converge in underground watercourse which emerge at the Wulan Caves, 18 kilometers to the southeast of Yanxiwan. There, they form the Danghe River, known as Danchuan in ancient times. The river runs all the way northward, sometimes rushing between mountains, sometimes fanning out as it winds its way across the Gobi Desert. Dam was also built in 111 BC, about 12.5 kilometers southwest of Dunhuang City. This was the first reservoir in ancient Dunhuang. Harnessing the Danghe River, ditches and canals distributed the water to an emergent Greenland. To protect this little paradise on Earth, a large defensive enclosure was erected along the edge of the oasis. This is the historic ancient fortress of Dunhuang. Such enclosures were meant to protect not only the city, but also the villages in the oasis and surrounding farms in the grasslands. The new prefectorial capital at Dunhuang was protected to the north by the Great Wall and the desert, while to the south was the earthen embankment of the great reservoir. It became the natural hub for the area. The meaning of the site's old barbarian name, Duanhong, has been lost in time, but from it sprang the Chinese name of Dunhuang, denoting great good fortune. Valley races across northern Italy to its pre-designed meeting with the Adriatic Sea. Sand settled where the river and the seawater met, counteracting each other to form a long and narrow complex of barrier islands. The area, surrounded by barrier islands and separated from the sea to form a lagoon. From the lagoon arose the pearl of the Mediterranean, Venice.
Venezia è il nome romano dei Veneti. Venezia, cioè plurale, il che significa che c'erano molte isole, molti centri in cui vivevano persone. Non c'era una città vera e propria. Abbiamo delle testimonianze che risalgono al V secolo d.C. in cui si descrivono queste aree dove vivono pescatori che, diversamente da tutto il resto della popolazione dell'Italia e direi dell'Europa, non vivono dell'agricoltura, ma pescano, acquistano sale, lo vendono e così via.
The place where these arcades and domes stand today was once a bleak tidal flat. The swampy grounds made it an ideal refuge from the trials of conflict and war. In 133 BC, as Han and Xiongnu began a protracted war, some of the Xiongnu moved further west. This eventually gave rise to waves of migration across Asia and Europe in the 4th and 5th centuries AD. In Europe, Germanic tribes overwhelmed the imperial capital at Rome in 476 AD.
Le invasioni barbariche e quindi il progressivo declino dell'impero romano hanno spinto alcune popolazioni a rifugiarsi in laguna e quindi hanno cercato un'area protetta dalle continue guerre, arrivavano in un'area a cui non interessava nessuno.
The influx of mainland refugees to the lagoon began in the early 5th century and peaked at the end of the 6th century. The Lombards, sweeping from the west to east through the cities and towns of the Adriatic coast, deprived the refugees of their shelter in the marshy areas nearest land, driving them deeper into the lagoon. Those from the north settled in Torcello and Burano, while those from the west took to the barrier islands nearer to the open sea.
Queste isole che rappresentano un rifugio inizialmente temporaneo e poi sempre più permanente per questi rifugiati.
Torcello was the original landing site for early migrants. Its cathedral of Santa Maria Assunta, built in 639 AD, is also the oldest church in Venice. In front of the church sits a stone throne called Attila's throne, after the legendary Hun King. It's a reminder of those early terrors of war and Venetian struggle for survival. In 809 AD, the Franks invaded from sea and after a year of conflict were driven away. This victory not only saved Venice from being annexed by the Franks, but also won its independence from the Eastern Empire in Byzantium. Facing threat from sea, the Venetians decided to concentrate their settlements on islands in the center of the lagoon. There, the sea could ward off dangers from land, while marshes and the barrier islands could guard against intrusions from the sea. Rialto, the center of present-day Venice, took shape as the beating heart of this dreamlike city.
Ufficialmente Venezia nasce nell'810 d.C. Questa è la tradizione e tutti i veneziani sono orgogliosi di questa data perché significa che la propria città è nata dal nulla, dalle acque.
Don Juan and Venice both rose from the sands, one in the desert, one in the sea. Flowers that took root in the wilderness each became a unique center of culture. In the summer of 2017, planned residential quarters along the west bank of Danghe River were successfully relocated in accordance with the city's planning. Not far away are the remains of a mound about 16 meters high, which marks the northwest corner of the ancient city. maps and records of Shaozhou were compiled in the first half of the 8th century. It only had 5 fragments intact when recovered from a cave library. The maps were lost, but the text describing the rivers, canals, forts, and various landmark structures in the ancient Danhuang of the Tang Dynasty. From these records, we can travel back in time to piece together what the city looked like in its prime. From the remaining ruins, we can get a rough outline of its shape. The old city was first built during the Han Dynasty. It was rectangular with a length of 1,132 meters from north to south and 718 meters from east to west. It had a circumference of about 3,700 meters, conforming to the requirements in the Han Dynasty that a prefectorial city should have a perimeter of between 3,000 and 5,000 meters.
那么敦煌郡这个城呢，到底建得怎么样子呢？实际上，《汉书》里头记载是很少。但是，敦煌城这些城门，城东门、城北门、城南门、城西门，这些大致的这些门呢，已经有。
Gates were built on all 4 sides of the city wall, with barbicans at each entrance for protection from intruders. The city wall is encircled by a moat 14 meters wide and 3 meters deep. The water comes from Danghe River at the city's southwest corner. It then divides in 2 directions around the city before converging at the northeast corner to flow onwards. Between the city wall and the moat, there was a low enclosure of a type often seen in the northwestern cities. Danghuang was further divided into an inner city and outer city to increase its value as a stronghold. The inner city is where prefecture government was located, while the outer city accommodated the commercial and residential areas.
Because 如果这个城一旦被突破，基本上这政府就没了。所以子城呢，它是城中心部分防御的核心部分。然后呢，罗城里头呢，就是各个里巷所在位置，它是按照城的城四门，把整个街道呢，其实啊，把城就划分为四块了。然后根据这四块呢，画了很多巷。 就像咱们今天呢，街道办事处呢一样的，就是一个一个街道办事，就按照这个进行的方块性的一些统治，就是居民呢管理起来比较方便。你要完全把它恢复起来，还是就是不能完全定位，但是我们起码是知道敦煌城里头有多少巷，哎，有哪些主要街道，这些都有。
Some of these manuscripts are title deeds and receipts concerning land and property sales. In them, we can find particular names for the districts and lanes within Danghuang City.
Danghuang城之外呢，它还有城四园，就城北园、城东园、城南园、城西园。这个园，这些地方呢，基本上都是敦煌市场发育所在地方。你像敦煌城东园。 那就是敦煌主要商贸之地，就是主要粟特人的分布的中心，商业民族分布的中心。而且在当时呢，敦煌的人有个习惯，就是他在城外有自己的庄子，他家在城里头的，他的就是庄子呢是在城外头的，就是他土地呢是在城外头的，他居住的地方跟他真正的劳动生产地方他是分割着。
Looking out from the gardens, artificial canals led to cultivated oases. Around the outer city, there were temples for various gods, including Prefecture Alta of Land and Grain and the God of the Land in the south, County Alta of Land and Grain in the west, God of Wind in the northeast, God of Rain in the east, Temple of Kings, as well as the Zoroastrian Temple for the Zodians in the east.The temples worked together to protect and bless the land. For centuries after the city was established, a more detached and independently spiritual place was erected to the southeast, where people worshipped, prayed, and placed their hopes for the afterlife. Flowing between San Wei Mountain and the desert of Mingsa Mountain is the Dangchen River.Along its west bank is a 1,680-meter-long cliff face running on a south-north axis, inlaid with 735 Buddhist caves. In 366 AD, a monk named Yurchuan excavated the first cave in the cliff face. For 1,000 years thereafter, until the 14th century, different peoples at different times all left their mark along the cliff.Today, there are 735 known caves at Mogao.
Miaoyan, which means wonderful cliff. So we went at 6 o'clock in the morning, and so I saw the sun come up in the east. It is directly opposite the cliff. It was quite a magical moment to imagine the silence,the beauty of the light coming into the caves, and you could see that it was a very special place.
These caves, with their varying shapes and structures, are time capsules which have preserved 45,000 square meters of murals.And 2,415 painted sculptures. They reflect the ups and downs of life in the region over more than 1,000 years. The murals depict the lifestyles, beliefs, environment, homes, and conurbations of their times. They tell stories of birth and death and record individual appearance. Within the caves, ancient Dun Huang lives on as colorful as it once was.Outside, the city has undergone reincarnations. In the 16th century, the Ming Dynasty ordered the closure of the Tianyuguan Pass. Dun Huang, located inside the pass, was deserted and the population relocated east. In 1723, under the Qing dynasty, the western regions were reorganized and the Sadzhou Bureau was founded. People moved to Dunhuang from 56 northwestern prefectures and counties. 2 years later, the section of the city on the west bank of the Danghe River that had been built during the Han and Tang dynasties were destroyed by floods. A new city to accommodate the bureau was built along the east bank of the river. After a turbulent history, the once new city has aged again. However, life goes on, and yet another new form has taken shape by the desert oasis. Today's Denghuang City covers 15.5 square kilometers on both sides of the Denghe River, encompassing both the West Bank's Han and Tang cities and the East Bank portion built by the Qing. The city wall rises, is destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed again, and rises once more in a mirror of the circle of life. Outside the city, the Mokau grottos hold our imagination like an immortal soul. The sea rises and falls while the stone stands true and steady. Stones were carved into branches and leaves, vines, columns and arcades. With the accumulation of wealth, they were brought here from across the ocean. In the early 15th century, the city's wooden structures were gradually demolished and replaced, transforming Venice into a city of stone atop the sea. The sea is its mirror. The bustling above water seems to be a plain and pale illusion, while under the water, hidden in silent darkness, is her truer self. Shoals are the natural product of sand wrestling with the waves. Between the sandbars are intricate natural channels. The land area grows and shrinks, fluctuating with the tides.
Venezia è nata, praticamente questa è l'acqua. Questo è il fondale, ogni tanto emergeva. Emergeva in certe ore e spariva in certe altre perché c'era l'alta marea. I veneziani hanno sfruttato queste terre un po' emerse e hanno cominciato a fare le case. Sì, cominciavano a piantare pali, molti pali.
Innumerable oak trees were chopped down and brought to the lagoon from the forests of northern Italy. One end was sharpened like a nail and then driven deep into the bog one after another. Wood piles must be driven into the layer of coranto, a hard clay usually found about 10 meters below the surface. Venetians call coranto the cornerstone of life.
Two layers of wooden boards were laid across the piles, and then the foundations of the structure were built with stone from the Istrian Peninsula. This stone is highly resistant to salt, moisture, and sea erosion. It was also widely used to build external walls, doors, windows, and ornamental sculptures. Venice, in all its beauty, rests upon these hidden wooden piles. There are about 12,000 under the Rialto Bridge. The Basilica of Santa Maria della Salute stands on around 1 million piles. The number of wooden piles under the city easily exceeds 10 million. They are like an upside-down forest, holding this city of stone up above the sea. Across the waters, small isolates are scattered, propped up on their own wooden piles like tiny scales on the back of a bigger fish. Venice's canals were built and lined with walkways running in parallel. To separate this artificial land from the sea, they're reinforced with fences and dike walls. They strain to bear the tension of the waves hitting the embankments, outlining the realms of solid ground and in constant water. Each has a similar structure within, built around a parish and its church. The church would be fronted by a public square, many of which would have a well to store fresh water brought by boats from the mainland. Back of the square were residential quarters for the ordinary people, while on its sides were mansions of the powerful and wealthy. Almost every square had an opening to the water, where people can embark on a boat to enter the canal system. Here the causeways join and become a part of the square. Most public life was carried out in these piazza, business transactions, gatherings after mass, and meetings and greetings beside the well are the currency of life. The square is still the center of life for most Venetians, but today fresh water is piped directly from the mainland, displacing the wells of their original function. In Venice, water nurtures life in more ways than one. Among the over 110 densely distributed islands are more than 170 capillary-like water channels, serving as the city's circulatory system. There are two tides a day. Salt water rushes into the lagoon during high tide and retreats back to the sea at low tide, carrying away the debris. This is how the lagoon breathes. The slow flow of the river are more prone to spoilage than seawater, so the tide is also responsible for regulating the lagoon's sea to freshwater balance. Waters not reached by the tides have poor circulation, stagnating and easily giving rise to plague and disease. In the early 9th century, while migrating to Rialto, Venetians began to construct the city's main artery on the basis of natural watercourse. The Grand Canal has an average depth of about 5 meters, It varies between 30 and 90 meters wide and winds its way for about 4 kilometers between the islands. Its snail-like course sees the west wind deep into the lagoon, while the east ends at the basin of St. Mark's. At high tide, seawater flows into the Grand Canal unimpeded and is pushed into more than 170 long narrow channels, entering all of the city's capillaries. This flow is key to the vitality of the city, a function that has changed little over the millennia.
E c'è un po' di brezza, il Canale Grande si muove. No, c'è questo movimento delle onde. Questo movimento delle onde porta la luce dentro i palazzi, per cui tutto vibra un po'. Proprio hai la sensazione della vita di questa cosa qui. È tutto un po' in movimento, è una cosa stupenda.
Once goods from all over the world entered the city through the Grand Canal. With the wealth amassed from trade in these goods, the churches, banks, shops, and luxurious mansions and palaces were built along its banks. In 1180, the first bridge was built across it, the famed Rialto Bridge. Since then, over 400 bridges have been built to connect the more than 100 islands of varying sizes. Dozens of once isolated parishes were unified into 6 administrative districts. Born from the collapse of the Western Roman Empire, a desolate marshland spawned a republic which became the greatest merchant power of its time by the late Middle Ages. By the 1500s, the city had assumed the form with which we are now familiar. Jacopo de Barbari created Bird's Eye View of Venice in the 16th century, recording how the city looked back then, a big fish. On the back of the fish, the skyline in the distance are the Alps, the highest mountain range in Europe. In the middle of the Grand Canal is the heart of the fish, the Rialto Bridge, the economic center of the city. At the tail is an armory. The arsenal, the military base where the fleets that would dominate the Eastern Mediterranean were built. In the basin of St. Mark's, Poseidon promises to keep the waters calm, while above the basin is Piazza San Marco, an open parlor to the world. Here, the Doge's Palace and St. Mark's Basilica stand next to each other, one the symbol of political power, the other representing theocracy. In 828 AD, 2 Venetian merchants ran the gauntlet to bring back the remains of St. Mark from Alexandria in Egypt, now ruled by the Muslim Caliphate. People greeted the remains with joy, and the ruling Doge donated most of his property to building a basilica to house and honor them. The construction was completed in 832 AD, and from 1075, every ship returning from abroad must offer a piece of treasure to decorate the basilica. Its walls, vaults, and dome are decorated throughout with gold mosaics. When sunlight is refracted into the building, the entire space is bathed in golden light. Under the protection of St. Mark, Venice flourished, and the Lion of St. Mark became the emblem of the independent republic. Since its erection, the basilica has undergone multiple reconstructions, repairs and redecorations in a succession of styles: Byzantine, Roman, Islamic, Gothic and Baroque. Many of its key historical moments have been recorded in sculptures or paintings. These also record the life of the city and the spirit of those who built it.
How did they achieve this? In the middle of the desert, on an island in a lagoon, there was only mud flats here in Venice, and there's only desert around Dun Huang. But both places, through human achievements, have transformed the place. So Dun Huang has its Morgau caves, Venice has its Palazzi.
Giants, Dun Huang and Venice, both built in the face of nature, are beyond individual perspectives and any imagination of human creativity. The two cities have long become their own unique markers in the river of time,